Welcome back to another episode of Football at the Bar with your host, T.A. and G-Money, bringing you all the highlights, talking mess, and all the plays you shouldn't have missed.
What's up, everybody? This is Football at the Bar, and we're your host. I'm T.A.
And this is Uncle Chuckus.
And we're here to talk about some NFL action, baby. I'm super fired up. Miss you guys. It's been a week. A whole lot of things taking place. And normally, we sit over here and talk about the players. What we're going to sit over and talk about today is the coaches. But before we get started, I need to remind you each and every single week, do me a quick favor. I need you to download. I need you to sit over and subscribe. And I need you to like. And also, we're being brought to you by ATB Media Network. So with that being said, we drinking on that Hen Dog. We went back to that Hen Dog OG. Classic. We talking about OG coaches. There's some OGs. They've been in the league for a while. They're getting their shot.
Yep.
And so we're going to talk about that. And so, boom, let's get it popping.
Yes, sir.
How you doing today?
Hey, I'm good. How about yourself?
Fired up and ready to go. Okay. You know what we got to talk about.
Talk to
that
me.
That big-ass trade that came through.
Big. Diggs.
Yeah. So what's your thought about Diggs going to Texans? And what do you think that does for the Texans now?
I think the biggest thing it does is add that swag. I think something just to take him over the top.
Mm-hmm.
I think their receiver group was pretty cool. But at the end of the day, I think they were young. You need a leader. You need somebody who's been there, been under them all them situations, big time pressure football. They didn't have a lot of them cats. Plus, they got hurt. And that tends to happen with young guys. They don't understand how to get prepped to play that long, you know.
That long 17-game season.
19-game, They're not used to that. You consider they went, you know, they won that first playoff game. So by the time, you know, you come playoff time, they weren't even available, which sucked. But, hey, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles in the league. You got to get yourself ready for that big-time football.
You know, it's funny you say they had a good receiver and crew. I don't think any of us would have went into last season and said, Nico Collins, even though Tank Dell. Like, but he's sliding the ass.
Right.
My man that came over, Noah Brown.
That
came
that was their top three,
who had a good three.
And so, then he had Schultz as a tight end.
Schultz. Uh-huh. But none of us would have said, that receiving crew is going to get a crack. And that receiving crew is going to sit over here and be putting it on cats. And so, really, what I look at is it was a receiving crew, like you said, that needed leadership, that needed not that they're going to help them play better, but it just gives them that extra weapon when one of them goes down or something like that to where it still keep the offense balanced.
Uh-huh.
But it is really, I think, a quarter for the quarterback. We've seen what high-level wide receivers that are mature, that are veterans, what they do for a young quarterback, you know, especially when they're very, very good. We saw what Diggs did for Josh.
Yes.
We saw what A.J. Brown did for Hurts.
Yes, absolutely.
So we know that's a winning strategy. I'm so excited to see what Diggs can do for my man. So
I think he offers those big plays, and he offers that consistency. He's been there, done that before. I think it'll be big. It's going to be big for him. I think it's – and the crazy thing, I think it's going to take Stroud's confidence to another level, which is, you know, it's saying a lot. Because right now that dude's playing on the, you know, on a whole other level as far as somebody – young coming into the league, you know, day one.
I'm giving and doing the deal. You know? I mean, the only thing we've kind of seen like it is maybe Mahomes. And Mahomes still sat a year. This dude came straight out and did the deal. So what do you think this does in terms of the pecking order of the AFC? Like, do you perceive this tilting it more in the Texans' favor in terms of against KC, because they're talking about those are the biggest competition right now.
Right, I think it definitely closes the gap some as far as everything they've done. I think they've made some big moves as far as bringing in a lot of players. You brought in a lot of talent to surround Stroud with. He showed you what he could do with just kind of having the bare minimum. And you bring in all these extra guys around him, I think it's going to be a problem. I think it does close the gap. But, you know, KC is KC. They figure it out.
Somehow, some way, unequivocally, is going to make it happen.
Right.
But, you know, what's interesting is that Texans did this with an offensive line that's a good offensive line, but were perpetually hurt all throughout the season last year. Getting them back, and then maybe they can have a season, a complete season, with them being mostly healthy, and then it gets even more scary because when you add a healthy offensive line that's like not a Mickey Mouse offensive line, a very good offensive line, and then give him another weapon, which is going to give him that time. When you're you know, people are talking about he's the third option. I don't think he's the third option. I think he's the 1B option. So you have Nico down the field. You have Diggs midfield. And then you have Tank Dell doing either or,
right.
But being that quick scat back, I mean, man, they got a whole deal. And then just picked up the running back from Cincinnati.
Right. Joe Mixon.
Mm-hmm. And so Joe Mixon runs hard. He didn't run that well in his last couple of years in Cincinnati. But when they can't sit over here and crowd the line, they shouldn't have been able to crowd the line in Cincinnati. But if they can't crowd the line, spread them out a little bit, mm-hmm. and whip behind that very good offensive line, they're going to be hard to beat. It's going to be interesting to see what they do on defense to complement Stingley, to complement they just got my man. Didn't they just get my man from Minnesota?
Oh, yeah. Danielle Hunter.
Absolutely. I mean, and then they also got the rookie from last year that came from Alabama. That was the top.
Was it Anderson? Yeah, he was defensive player.
Will Anderson. Right. So, I mean, that whole team is coming together. Right. Let me tell you something. We're about to talk about coaches. How suspect were you of the leadership of this team in the two previous years when they were just bringing in black coaches just to sit over and say, in a black city to say, I got black coaches. And they were bringing in, like, I don't want to say my man – who was
you talking about the Texans?
Yeah, the Texans. They brought in the cap that was a wide receivers coach from the Baltimore Ravens. I can't think of his name.
Who I don't know. Only people I remember O'Brien.
No, and after O'Brien, they brought
and
in.
Then, I forgot the cat's name after him
because he was only there for a year.
He lasted for a year.
Lovie Smith was the wide receivers coach. I don't like to say Lovie is a snow. Lovie was a full year. He went an intern. They hired him. They tried to hire somebody else.
Oh, my fault. I'm confusing him with the 49ers. You know what I'm talking about. He deserved to be the actual head coach.
Right. And they didn't give him the jeans. Right. Yeah, So, you know, you got those two coaches. I was very suspect. They came from New England. A lot of New England people don't actually pan out because they try to bring the New England way with them.
Right.
And I think that's more of a coaching deal, bringing a New England coaching deal to someplace else versus the building of the team.
Okay.
And, you know, they were doing all those one-year deals. They were getting all these unrestricted free agents in there. It was like, so they were just trying to find the few people that would stick as they were building this up and accumulating those draft choices. Mm-hmm. We're getting rid of Deshaun and everybody. And now they've put together a team. They got D'Amico that's proven. He actually should have won, in my opinion, should have won head coach of the year last year. You know, your rookie coach, people thought that this team was going to be one of the worst teams in the league. They ended up being one of the better teams in the league, making it to the playoffs, winning a playoff game, even though those votes go in before the playoffs. That's why he didn't win it. But D'Amico's doing the damn thing. I'm super excited about the Texans.
I'm excited about that.
You know, having lived in Houston just a few years ago and living right down the street from NRG Stadium, super excited about what the Texans can be and what they can do. But let's talk about some other coaches because, you know, we talked about D'Amico, who has come in to this team that everybody – including myself, most people thought was dumpster fire. Weren't going to be able to be anything special. Mm-hmm. And leadership is so important.
Absolutely.
You know, we've seen that obviously with Belichick. We've seen that with a whole bunch of coaches. Which coach do you think has the leadership style to of the seven new coaches and take over the deal to sit over and make an impact similar to D'Amico?
I think the best thing about D'Amico is that his team bought into his, you know, what he was selling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's hard. And I think that's the reason why it's tough to find a coach and players that are, you know, run through walls for each other. It's hard. So with that said, and as a Raider fan, of course, you know, we're gonna talk about my man Antonio.
Let's start this bad boy out in the battle now.
Dude, man, I think he's in a good situation. He's already, you know, had a little taste of it, so he knows at the end of the day the type of responsibility. He knows how to interact with his players. I think he's built up a respect that most coaches just don't get.
They just don't get.
I think it was night and day from the moment that he took over. Like, these dudes.
It unequivocally was.
It was like, come on, man. Like, this, you could tell that these dudes wasn't trying to play for Josh. You know, like, they weren't fucking with him at the end of the day.
And that ain't nothing new.
Yeah, it's not.
That's how it was for him in Denver.
Yes. So, you know, to try to, you know, quote unquote, bring the Patriot way out here, nah, that's not what we do. And to watch how he embraced the whole culture, like, he was like, man, I'm a Raider fan growing up. This is what I do. I played for, you know, the Giants or the Redskins, but I'm a Raider at heart. So to see him driving down, you know, the freeway and this Lolo, you know, and this 6'4".
Man, come on.
Come on, man. Don't nothing say more, you know, I'm a Raider than, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. Like, I'm with y'all. This is what I do. You know, mm-hmm. you from the neighborhood, you from the land.
When he grew up, the Raiders were in L.A.
Right,
so
right.
That's why people don't understand why. Why is he a Raider fan? They're Oakland. No, yeah. There was a time that the Raiders were in L.A.
Yeah, more synonymous
playing
with
at
LA.
Coliseum. I went to a game as a young kid.
We all did,
you know. And Antonio Pierce. I don't think he's older than me, but I know that influence, the Raider influence on L.A. I mean, you got the L.A. Raider hat on right now. Hey. The influence on the city was
culture
huge.
Culture in general. Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. Now, the Raiders have brought, I don't know how much money, just off of, you know, logo and apparel being associated with certain people mm-hmm. or certain people rocking the hats in general. Mm-hmm. We know the NWA days. We know what NWA brought to, you know, the Laker logo. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Raider logo. Mm-hmm. We know what that was. But, nah, of course, that's my coach right now that I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in, you know, quote unquote, I guess, year 1.5 or, you know, because he did have some time. But I think the team has embraced him in such a level that doesn't really happen for a coach. We're gonna have some problems.
You know what Antonio epitomizes is he epitomizes quintessentially leadership. Mm-hmm. And what leadership is how do you galvanize the people that you're leading to run in the same direction that you need them, you want them to go in. And so when you're looking at Antonio Pierce, that's exactly what he did is he galvanized the players who were disillusioned by their previous leadership.
True. But and the fans, and the fans as well.
And the fans as well, unequivocally in
exactly,
the fans. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so when you see that, when you see a team disillusioned, when you see a team not wanting to go out and win, he took so much thrust from the team in terms of McDaniels that they didn't even care about winning for themselves. What he brought back into that locker room and into Raider Nation as a whole is one optimism mm-hmm. that you can win. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to have the most superior talent. You have to sit over here and give the superior effort.
Right.
And you can only do that when you're motivated.
True.
And so he's motivated that team and more importantly, giving that team a belief in themselves that they can win. Mm-hmm. When they can win, when the odds were stacked against them. The odds were stacked against them when he took over that team. And, you know, he didn't go 10-1.
Right.
But what he did do was he went just above 500, if I'm not mistaken.
He went
6-5.
They were 9-something. They were 9-8? 97. They had a shot at the playoffs.
Yeah, they had a shot at the playoffs.
Okay, mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah, they were nowhere close. You weren't even thinking about them as well.
No, not at all.
Now, his biggest challenge is not, you know, his inexperience, like many of the pundits tried to propagate out there, is that, oh, he doesn't have any experience. He only has a few years, so I don't, you know, so much a lack of belief in him. Which is so funny. You have lack of belief in a coach that's already shown you that he can turn the deal around, mm-hmm. but other coaches that are just sitting over here getting their first shot, individuals have the ultimate belief in. We'll talk about that later. But what's interesting about him is that, or the biggest challenge in my eyes that he faces, is just simply the division that he's in.
Tough.
You know, when you sit over here and you're going up against, I mean, arguably, this is just so crazy.
Right.
Arguably,
I know where you're going.
three of the top 10 coaches in many people's eyes,
right.
you know, that are out there. When you have KC's coach, Big Andy. Red, you got Andy Reid, you got the Broncos, you got Sean Payton, and then you have Harbaugh, uh-huh. which we're going to get to. Uh-huh. Just starting off with the Chargers. I mean, people, you know, Harbaugh just coming off of a national championship,
right.
bringing national championship to Michigan, and like the, you know, the first time in like 50 years or
right,
something
right,
like that,
right.
Beating Ohio State 2 years in a row, which hadn't been done.
And you know you're the man
if you do that, and having experience in the NFL. Prior and having success going into a downtrodden organization and lifting them up and getting them all the way to the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. which they didn't win with Kaepernick, but they actually got there. I think that's his biggest challenge
is
that your competition, you know, mano a mano, are other coaches that are probably heading to the Hall of Fame for coaching.
Yes.
So what comes with challenge also comes opportunity.
Ah.
Because my man has opportunity to get in their ass. And then say,
I'm here.
I might not get in for my play because only the elite of the elite do it. And I was just very, very, very good. but I'll fuck around and get in there because of my coaching. So right. I look forward for the opportunity mm-hmm. that he has. So what's your thoughts on that?
Hey, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm looking forward to seeing it. But with that, you know, speaking of the Raiders, we can talk about Callahan's son. What you think about him?
Callahan's son, who sent over here and took over the Tennessee job.
Tennessee job. Got to hand it to him.
You know, what I think about Callahan is he was given a great team in the Cincinnati Bengals, made the Super Bowl with them, mm-hmm. had a great quarterback, had some unbelievable weapons. What I love about the opportunity that he has is they have a young quarterback who's obviously not the Bengals quarterback. He's not a Joe Burrow by any stretch of the imagination. But what I learned in this past season when he got his opportunities is the boy is game.
Okay.
Like, you know, he's not going to cower. He's not going to punk out. Mm-hmm. He's going to throw the ball big and throw the ball far. Mm-hmm. And he's going to sit over here and do what he can athletically because he has some athleticism yeah. about him. And he doesn't have a fear of the contact.
Right.
So when you bring all that together, and I saw him getting Hopkins' ass one time on the sideline, which I can only – all I can do is respect that you don't cower. When you amongst a great, right. you know, Hopkins is a great.
Absolutely.
And he got in Hopkins' ass when Hopkins ran a bat. So when you bring it in totality, I think he's walked into a team and what Ray Cawthon, or I want to say Ray Cawthon is the GM. What he's done in terms of bringing in additional talent mm-hmm. to ensure the success of this young quarterback. Now it's all on Callahan to sit over here and prove his chops and prove he wasn't being carried by the previous regime's players.
Right.
That he had a good hand into their success. So I'm excited to see exactly how that turns out. Yeah.
Hey, man, I think it might be tricky for him at the end of the day. I think the tough part is when you fall into a situation and the talent's not around you. So now you got to put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Have you seen how much money they've been spending?
Dude, they've been spending money. So you figure you got Calvin Ridley, you bring him in. Mm-hmm. Now, I think Ridley's cool, but is he a game changer? He's up there in age.
Y'all forget Ridley when Julio was hurt.
Oh, come on, man.
And when he was in Atlanta over here giving out more.
I'm not saying he's not a good receiver, but I'm looking at it, the totality of the situation.
Him
like
and
all
Hopkins.
The pieces.
Him and
so
Hopkins.
You figure you lose Derrick Henry, you're bringing in another back to be the cowbell back, and then you bring in Pollard. Who?
Well, no, that's Pollard, and then they had the other dude.
I'm talking about the rookie they had last year. Who you know?
Well, what was his name? I can't even think his name. But
he's
dude
definitely
was
cool.
He's cool.
He
put in work.
But I'm saying when you're bringing in all these new pieces, like that's the thing. Like mm-hmm. you're trying to figure it out here. Hopkins is still a free agent, FYI. So we don't know what it's going to look like.
No, he's not a free agent this year. He's a free agent next year.
I thought he was a free agent this year. I thought he had to sign back.
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
well, if they have him, that's a big thing.
They have
But, you know, to have a young quarterback, a new coach, and the pieces of the puzzle are kind of moving. You know, you're moving away from the cowboy that you've had all these years in Derrick Henry, and now, you know, you might be transitioning to, you know, more of a committee as well as we're going to throw the ball a little bit. I think
you have
D'Amico,
to evolve.
Don't let the smooth taste fool you. A D'Amico Ryan situation just does not happen. I mean, it's rare.
They don't have the quarterback that D'Amico had.
But nobody knew CJ was going to be a monster like he was. Like, you figure all young quarterbacks have their hiccups and they're going to have their bumps and bruises. He didn't really go through that. I mean, he threw, you know, the least picks in the league. His ratio to touchdown, the picks was the best in the league. Mm-hmm. And you're competing with, you know, the best of the best. So,
but that quarterback, what did he do his first game in there? Remember what he did?
Who? Oh, CJ Stroud?
No. Quarterback for Will Levis.
He made some big throws.
He had four touchdowns.
He made some big throws.
Two
game.
Or three of them
yes.
to Hopkins,
yes.
which fucked off my fantasy because I was playing in that game. You understand what I'm saying? So,
I mean,
when you throw four touchdowns in your very first game ever suiting up to start an NFL game, what that shows you he has it in him.
Right. But you figure, like you were comparing the situations, I don't want Callahan to get it fooled. Like, you have the same talent, you know, Tennessee
Ray Cawthon is sitting over here ensuring that he has something like it. I think the GM is ensuring that he has some semblance of talent. When you have Ridley, Hopkins, I don't think anybody can complain about that. Ridley and Hopkins?
Ridley and Hopkins is nice.
I mean, that's about as good as you can get to give to a rookie quarterback. So then the rookie quarterback, Will Levis, has to prove that, you know, individuals did make mistakes in letting him fall to the second round, and he should have been a first-round quarterback. Because if we remember, Will Levis in that draft was supposed to go number two, and then he failed.
Right.
And then he was upset, and the camera was on him. Remember all that? So he came out with a chip on his shoulder, threw them four touchdowns. He had some ups. He had some downs. It wasn't a smooth selling like Stroud. But, you know, the reality is that Stroud, just like Mahomes, just like Joe Burrow, you know, it has to be a little bit of luck. You have to sit over here, and they don't come around. They're not like growing trees.
Right.
And so there are many times that organizations don't have an opportunity to get one of those very, very, very special players.
It's hard.
So what you have to do when you don't have one of those very, very special players is hope you have a player that's good enough if you surround them with talent. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the GM, in my opinion, did a great job of, is saying, I don't have one of those Shrouds. I don't have one of those Mahomes. So let me go out, and I got a whole bunch of money. Mm-hmm. Let me sit over here and acquire as much talent as I can to give a respectable evaluation
of your quarterback.
And then we'll know by the end of this year, is Will Levis the deal? Is this something we can build on? Did he have enough highs, or did his highs be greater than his lows? And we'll have an opportunity with this team that's been assembled to make that determination.
I give him 4-5 games, maybe. Maybe they win 4-5 games.
Oh, no. Maybe. No. We got bets and push-ups on that, brother.
What?
I'm saying, again, the GM, the brother did a hell of a job in putting this team together. When the team, if you're thinking about this team from last year, you're 110% right. When you got to go and you got to really dig in and do the research of what they put around this cat, it's enough talent to where you should make the playoffs in the last. He should be the second team coming out of. You know, and here's what's so scary. Just speaking of that, it's so funny that we're talking about that. So we're talking about really the AFC South.
Okay.
And the AFC South went from one of the worst divisions to one of the top divisions because Anthony Richardson, I just seen something about him in Twitter. And this dude's like, I've never been away from football this long. I'm about to come back and destroy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't forget about Indianapolis. Right. Then who's the four? And then you have the Jaguars. I mean, you're talking about You might be right. That went from the worst division to one of the very best divisions in one fucking season.
That's tough. I don't see. That's why I said maybe like 5.
Damn,
that's a tough division.
When you really look at it,
you think they beat who? You think they beat twice in the division?
I don't think any of them beat anybody twice. I think everybody is a 1-1.
That's fair.
Just it's stacked from top to bottom. Right. And then when you say that, it's almost like Tennessee might be the worst.
By default,
Tennessee or Indiana, and I think they all got young quarterbacks. Nobody has an old quarterback. You got Texans with Shroud. You got Indiana with Richardson. You got Tennessee. Well, here's what twists. This is how you know. Who's the fourth? And then you got Trevor.
Uh-huh.
This is how you know they're going to do the worst. They got the worst quarterback. That's what's fucked up.
With them no experience.
But then here's what happens. Okay, we got the hardest division. So this is what the twist is. You're talking about the Texans have Shroud.
Right.
You're talking about the Jaguars have
Trevor.
You're talking about the Colts have Richardson. Mm-hmm. And then you're talking about the very worst quarterback with Levis. So what this does is it allows them to, one, evaluate him without any bullshit or consequence. We can't do like the Giants did with Jalen Jones.
Right.
We can't 5 years straight. We can't give a good evaluation because we don't have enough tools.
Yep.
They can't say that. I love how the GM sit over here and made sure we can make that evaluation, and if we are the worst, because he is unequivocally the weakest, then what happens is we're positioned to sit over here and the team is kind of put together.
Right.
And we can sit over here and leverage some draft picks and go up and get one of the better quarterbacks, one, two, or three, in next year's draft.
They won't have to because they only going to win four or five games. They already going to beat it.
I mean, you know, it's so funny. I didn't think that. But when you look at this division,
it's tough.
All I'm saying is if they are better than that, then Levis is the deal.
I agree.
So this is a real determining season. It's a real Mendoza line on. We're gonna know, Duke, can you do the deal or can't you? And one last thing is, and you'll appreciate this being a tremendous and diehard Raider fan, is the coach, the head coach for the Titans, his father was a head coach for the Raiders,
Bill Callahan.
And he is with the Titans managing that front line.
Oh, is that what it is? Oh, he's working with the O-line? Yeah. he's one of the best O-line coaches, most definitely.
So, you know, that's another little feather in the cap. But, you know, you definitely have opened my eyes and brought me back to reality. So I appreciate that. So, you know, we've had an opportunity to talk about Pierce Callahan. You know, the big one that's going to knock him out. We'll be staying for the last is Big Jim Harbaugh. And, I got a lot to say about this
cat. Talk to me.
You know, we've talked about cats over the overvaluation of oneself. Mm. And so Harbaugh has earned the right to sit over here and think he has cojones as big as King Kong and that he is the man and that his way is the right way. Because he's been able to do it on both planes where very few have. Mm-hmm. Professional and in the collegiate level. He's taken a program on both levels that were downtrodden or in a lower trajectory, right, and turn them around to get them to not just moving in the right direction, but get them to the pinnacle of each side of the game. And so I don't want to take that away from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I know his confidence in himself and in his system and in how he gets down and what he does is a part of his greatness.
Right.
Because that oozes into his players. They should have the same confidence that they're going to win just exactly how he says they're going to win and how he feels that they're going to win. But my problem is that your mechanism that worked in college doesn't necessarily always transition to the pros. And your mechanism that allowed you to win in college was the same mechanism that allowed you to win in the pros, but in the old school. You know, and we're not talking about 30 years ago, but 6, 7, 8 years ago was a different game than it is now. And true. So what allowed you to win then or get to the championship with a athletic quarterback in Colin Kaepernick and get to the Super Bowl then is not necessarily what will work now. And he wants to go to a hard nose and I'm going to run it and I'm just going to run it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but you got real monsters in your own fucking division. You got with the Raiders, you got Adams.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? He's let go all of his wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
You actually have a quarterback that can throw one of the best in the entire league, but you're setting your team up to where his throwing ability is not going to be a catalyst to your team's success. You have Denver, and you have an offensive coach there that that if he gets the right player for him,
mm-hmm,
that it could be absolutely detrimental, just like it was for the NFC South, mm-hmm, when he was there prior. Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? Uh-huh. And then obviously we have Mahomes. So sometimes when you overvalue your greatness and you are very steadfast into, I'm so great, I don't need to look anywhere else. I don't need to be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think so much of yourself, I just can't help but to think that the game could somewhat humble you because you chose to come to the division with the greatest motherfucker who ever did it.
Mm-hmm.
You chose to sit over and come to one of the very best offensive coaches that have ever did it.
Mm-hmm.
You chose to sit over here and come to play against a team with a coach that his team is willing to sit over here and die for them on that field. There's a difference.
Yeah, it's true.
As much as cats love Andy, they ain't willing to die for him. But I'll tell you this, cats is willing to die for Antonio Pierce. Yeah. Uh-huh. So what that means is that you have six games of cats that all have specialness wrapped up in them. And depending on what the Raiders do at quarterback, you know, that could be a whole nother issue and a whole nother challenge. You think he's probably going into it thinking, oh, yeah, I'm about to run, be able to run through the Raiders. Well, bud, ain't that easy. Not ain't nothing. So, you know, what I do know is that he's going to have enough runaway to sit over here and fell a couple of times. Antonio Pierce won't have. But Antonio Pierce can have two brutal seasons. He's going to be given the ability to have two brutal seasons.
A new quarterback.
No, I'm
not saying that he should, but I'm just saying that's the type of leeway.
Well, he got the leeway to where what he's going to have the leeway to do is say it's going to be just like the old boy Denver's going to have. He's going to have the ability to have two shitty seasons before he's expected to be good. But here's where the twist is. Mm. Everybody's going to be expected to be good in 2 or 3 years.
No, but this is what I feel about a gym, though. I feel like before he gets fired, it will be everybody else's fault, but his first.
But then you're firing everybody who you initially brought in because he didn't fire everybody.
It happens all the time. It happens all the time. And you're like, okay, well, the defensive coordinator has to go, but you hired him.
Right.
What about you?
Right.
Where's your responsibility laying? Right. And it happens all the time. And I'm like, dude, that's fucked up. But it happens. The thing about Jim, I feel like the first thing he did when he came into the franchise is trying to put his personal stamp on. I think he did the same thing in Michigan. I think he did the same thing at the 49ers. Mm-hmm. This is what we're going to play. We're going to ground and pound. We got Frank Gore out here with a running quarterback. You know, we're going to throw the ball a little bit. But at the end of the day, we're going to ground and pound and play a great defense. Mm-hmm. I think he did the same thing at Michigan.
He did.
We're no longer trying to throw the ball over the field, running the spread and doing all this cute, you know, shit. Excuse my French. He was like, no, we're going to run the ball. You know, and that's what he did. That quarterback doesn't have a whole lot of pressure on him. We're not asking you to do a whole lot. Just don't lose the game. And we're going to run the ball. We're going to play a good defense. And he won a national championship. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, at the end of the day, that gives you that swagger. That makes you feel like you're better than what you are.
No, well, that was the case.
I don't know. I'm curious to see where that gets you. I think
that's going
to
be Mahomes.
Yes, you need to grow. I don't think nothing works against Mahomes. I think he figures it out. I mean, he's just a savant at the position. He's always been that to me.
From day one.
I think but to their hit job the ground has running to be, is tough. It's tough.
But Antonio Pierce doesn't come from that perspective. He comes from, I'm going to put you in the ground.
But you got to understand where he comes from. He comes from the land. This is how we think. We're not about to concede.
I come from the land. Well, too.
You know, he comes from the land. So, you know, yeah, you might knock me out, but you want to prove it.
Right, you got to prove it.
You got to prove it.
You got to take the fade.
Yeah, so we're going to decide at the end of the day, you know, how it's going to go. And I feel like that's the approach that he brings to the Raiders. Okay, y'all supposed to blow us out by 30. Okay, you're going to have to prove that, though. Right. You know, and then we'll see, you know, at the end of the day, when the scoreboard reads, you know, fourth quarter 0-0-0.
And I will tell you this, there's nothing. We just talked about a healthy, aggressive, burgeoning division in the AFC South. There is nothing more that gets me more excited for NFL football in 2024 than the AFC West. and how all of this is going to shake out, because I'm a KFC fan, you're a Raider fan, we got Harbaugh in the motherfucking mix, and then we got what's the other team I'm missing? We got
Sean Payton,
and then we got Sean Payton. I mean, you want to talk about it? Doesn't get any better. It's actually more special than the AFC South, because you have coaches that are as big of stars and personalities and contributors to the success of their team as the great players that are also there.
That's so rare.
So I'm so fucking fired up, and it's so crazy. We're going to talk about this later on in the offseason. But the AFC, just like we talked about last year, about, oh my God, the AFC is going to be so crazy. It's going to be so aggressive. It's going to be so real motherfuckers that, oh my God, what's going to happen?
Right.
The only problem when that happens, you know what really determines it? is injury. So injuries is like going to be the thing that's going to kind of separate teams.
Mm-hmm. It does it all
that
time.
Should have been great, you know, that are not going to actually be as great or live up to the deal. But you know what, Harbaugh, as you walk in here and you talk this shit and you strut and you know you got your gravitas and
his is arrogance and swag.
Arrogance and swag. Hey, guess what? You're about to meet a buzzsaw. You're about to go through a stretch of 6 weeks where five games mean everything.
Exactly.
You in a playoff setting the middle of your motherfucking season and you ain't even got there yet. So it's going to be extremely exciting to watch that unfold. You know, let's talk about a coach that is going to be interesting. I wouldn't go as far as to say exciting, but it's for damn sure going to be interesting.
Okay.
And that's Jared Mayo.
Jared Mayo is very interesting.
You know, this is a coach that was a position coach. He wasn't even the DC, but the organization, which is probably recognized as the greatest organization in all of sports, put in his contract that he would be the successor for the next coach. Like, you ain't even got to look at nobody.
That's crazy.
This is who we going with, no matter what the NFL's, anybody, this is who we going with. And Jared Mayo got that nod. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of pushback out there about, well, we don't know who Jared Mayo is.
Right.
Well, the one thing I can promise you is that organization knew who he was, or they wouldn't have put him in the contract, because we don't see that very often.
Right.
The players that play for this man know exactly who he is, and that's what matters most. The challenge that he has is talent. Even with the third pick in this year's draft, one pick, you know, they always use the expression, one monkey doesn't stop a show. Pick ain't going to sit over and make you great.
It ain't.
You follow what
it
I'm
ain't.
Saying?
It ain't. It
and
ain't.
So it's going to be interesting to see how great he is as a leader. Mm. Is he like my man from the Texans? Does he have D'Amico Ryan's greatness? D'Amico Ryan's a previous player.
That's a tough.
D'Amico Ryan's a previous player.
So is Mayo, huh?
Mayo was probably a little bit greater of a player, has a little bit more resonance with that organization in terms of, you understand what I'm saying? And even though D'Amico Ryan's, what was special about him is he played at that motherfucker. Mm-hmm. Well, this motherfucker won Super Bowls with you know what I'm saying? So it's a different level.
Yeah, true.
It's going to be very interesting to watch him navigate and really what the difference is between him and what the Texans are doing now, because they have a very similar general manager structure.
Right.
But what the difference is do they go get him that quarterback?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where the problem is. Who's that quarterback? We've had the talks. And at the number three, are they in a position, are they going to actually be able to get that quarterback that has the opportunity, has the ability and skill set to do what Stroud did?
Right.
Probably the answer is no.
No, you need to throw that out, that whole thing.
Well, no, but we can't say that, because nobody was saying Stroud was going to do what he was going to do until he did it.
True, but I think a lot of
two people, to three is not that far off.
I think a lot of people had doubts in regards to Bryce. Just because of the size.
It was just because of size, but still, he was inevitably. If you and I were doing this a year ago, we would still be saying Bryce because he came from Alabama.
But I wouldn't know. The only reason why I'm saying this is because I watched that Ohio State
I didn't
game,
either, so I feel you.
And I was like, this is an incredible performance. It was a great performance. It was a great all-around performance. He showed his athleticism, and he showed that he could throw the ball. And then at the same point in time, you're 6'3", and you got size to him. So that means something to me at the end of the day. No disrespect to the short people. At the end of the day, I think you can play football. But there's just levels.
Well,
there are things that I,
and I feel you.
That
I and
just
I
like
feel
to
you.
See.
And I feel the same way. But consensus, you know, was still.
Do you want to see your point guard 5'9"? Is that your preference?
Obviously not. Unequivocally not.
You would prefer him to have a little size?
We was raised here in L.A. We were raised with Magic.
Right.
So obviously a big point guard is more advantageous, in our opinion, growing up with Magic and seeing what he did, than a Muggsy.
It's tough. Everybody can't be Drew Brees. Like, it's tough to sit in the pocket at 6 feet and be Russell Wilson. Like, it's tough to see over the the line. Like, all these things matter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to have Stroud out there, it just looked different. It looked a little more effortless for him. Not to mention, you're at Alabama.
That won't be the concern for the Patriots. What we're looking at is a report just came out today. Colin Cowherd sat over and said what he's heard is the Washington Commanders, are picking
McDaniels. Or Jalen Daniels.
Jalen Daniels. So what we're looking at is either J.J. McCarthy or we're looking at Drake May. So we don't have those same concerns of ineptitude and physical abilities. Uh-huh. You follow what I'm saying?
Right.
Now it just comes down to is if they're going to actually go with the quarterback, which one is better and which one do we project as the ability. Now, what I'm hearing is that they're saying something is magical about Michigan. And they got Tom Brady from Michigan. J.J. McCarthy just won a national title. Harbaugh, who they respect, has said he's really the best one there. He just didn't have the offense to really display it. That's all you've been seeing. They've sold him on that, and that J.J. McCarthy is going to be the pick. And so, in my opinion, there is no way, shape, or form that J.J. McCarthy is a quarterback that you can sit over here in the AFC and put against a Stroud, put against a Mahomes, put against any great quarterback, put against my man from Cincinnati, put against my man from the Chargers, any great quarterback from the AFC,
right.
And J.J. McCarthy is going to be the catalyst to lead this team to success, to wins over those teams.
No.
That's my concern.
My money. I'm not betting my money on him against none of them. I just can't see
it. And Harbaugh sitting over here again, that overvaluation of oneself and the belief in oneself, can sit over here. For me, you can't sell me on Harbaugh stupid enough that he had Mahomes, that he was going to still run the ball for an entire half. He had a Mahomes.
Right.
That you weren't going to sit over and use this special player to pass the ball if McCarthy was that special.
That's disrespectful to him as a player. Like, you meaning we're not going to allow you to show your talent on no play for a whole half?
And then did it for two seasons. So as much as it sounds good about how great he is, I think anybody who falls for that sell is boo-boo the fool.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope the Patriots aren't. Matter of fact, I hope the Patriots sit over here and realize what it is. This is a rebuilding process and we got to get talented.
Right, let's
trade out.
Exactly.
And sit over here. I hope, one, that Mayo has enough cachet in that organization and he has enough wherewithal to understand truly where they're at and not think that this is the year in the third position of what we got to do to sit over here and find that one. Yeah. And you ain't finding another one in the sixth, seventh round like they found with Tom Brady. That's not happening. So, and I don't believe these are the individuals. So sit over here. Get the right positions right on their team, a team that's ready to accept and assume a very high level player, and wait till next year.
Absolutely,
you know, and then you know, have enough balls as an organization to stand behind Mayo and don't waver, because this season is what it is. You guys have set up the season to be that, to be a team that you're rounding out your team in terms of the most important positions and getting the right players in the most important position. So next year, even though you lose this year, next year you're in a position to go get that quarterback.
That's
it ain't going to be my man from Colorado. It ain't going to be Shador. You know, I don't what's it called? Is made that known.
Oh, clear. He's not. We're not.
That's not the deal. Uh-huh. But there's Ewers. You know, there might be one other quarterback that comes out other than Shador next year that they can sit over here, maybe be in the fourth position and the fifth position, and then jump up, give up a couple first round picks to get. But Jerod Mayo, I love. And I have to stand behind that the team did not write in his contract, you're next up, because he ain't special.
And Bill co-signed on it, too, so that says a lot as well.
It would have happened unless Bill co-signed on it.
Yeah, it wouldn't have happened. You figure he's jumping over DCs and OCs mm-hmm. and whoever else into that position mm-hmm. because they see something. So, I mean, I'm a guy that, you know, give a guy a chance at the end of the day and let's see what happens and then make your evaluation instead of talking, you know, you ain't going to talk trash and he ain't even had a chance to show you, you know, his work.
Right.
That's a tough piece. Who else you got going?
So, we talked about Callahan. We talked about Pierce. We talked about Jeremiah.
Uh-huh.
The remaining coaches that we have, so that
we got Morris.
So there are four more coaches. Uh-huh. We got Morris. Mm-hmm. We got Quinn. We got McDonald. Mm-hmm. No, we talked about Harbaugh too.
We talked about Harbaugh. So we got three.
So we got three left. Which one of those three do you not believe in? And you could say I believe in all three.
So I don't know. I feel like probably McDonald out of anybody out that group.
Why? I mean, is it solely because his experience level is almost minimal?
Well, you know what? McDonald, Quinn, I think they might be neck and neck. Only because of the situation. I'm just not big on the Dallas Cowboys. I never have. They lose the running back. I don't even know who you replaced him with. It was Stone Cold Mystery.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't replace with nobody. You had Derrick Henry lined up on a platter.
Begging.
You know, begging to come out get there. Me. Please, please. And you didn't even make a strong move.
Mm-hmm.
I understand you got to pay, you know, you got to pay Lamb and you got to pay Micah Parsons. You know, they're coming up for their big contracts. But damn, you know, you have nobody to run the ball.
Reports are coming out. They want to get Parsons out. There are people in the building that don't like Parsons.
I'm not big on him, but at the end of the day,
man, come on.
I don't let go of young talent.
Man, you're not big on Parsons.
I'm gonna say this. Man, anybody I have to pay a lot of money to. I respect him. This is my thing. If you play on the edge, I already gotta pay you a lot of money just because, right? So you gotta affect the game consistently for me to feel like I'm justified in paying you this amount. I don't feel like he does that.
But so look, he's top five in all the statistical categories.
So he's never going to be a high tackle guy. That's always a problem for me. That's a problem.
What edge is high tackle guy?
For me, you got to have a high tackle rate, like a Max Crosby. He doesn't make plays like Max Crosby.
Max Crosby's special.
He is, but you're special. If you're getting special money, you're special. So you want to be paid as a top three, top five guy, then you better show me top three, top five stats at the end of the day.
But his stats are there.
They're cool.
I understand he doesn't have a high motor like Crosby.
It's a problem.
Well, man, Crosby's shit is insane. There's very few people in the entire league.
That. I need that.
But that can't be the determinant of whether you get paid or not.
So would you question Aaron Donald's motor?
He's the greatest who ever did it.
You get my point here. At the end of the day, I have to pay you top three, top five people money at your position.
Chris just because Jones. It's Chris Jones.
Chris Jones is a way better player to me than Micah Parsons.
But too. What Chris Jones does is he shows it when it's showtime. He doesn't have the highest motor. My point is, when we talk about motor. Mm-hmm. Motor can't be the determinant. Do you show it?
I think he has a way better motor than Micah Parsons does.
Micah Parsons We can agree to disagree. Micah Parsons is great, and I don't want to. This is not a determinant.
Oh, right, true.
All my point is that when you look at those three, McDonald, Quinn, uh-huh. basically, I think that's more of an indictment on Quinn. Because if Bill Belichick came and became the defensive coordinator, what do you think Micah Parsons would be like?
I would like to see it. Because under Dan Quinn, I just wasn't impressed.
You weren't impressed. Now, Dan Quinn has shown an inability to have players play at the very highest level. He got to one Super Bowl. He up 23-3 based on his offense, not based off of his defense, and his defense gave up all those points. So he has a record, and most people that come from that Seattle system have a record of getting up those booby cheeks, not getting the maximum and the most out of players. I mean, they had one team,
uh-huh.
Seattle did, that sent over here was special, and that was the players, not the coaching. And we've seen that bear fruit because they weren't able to keep that at a high level. Yeah. And when those disciples left and got jobs because of based off of those players, they've never been able to replicate it. Right. So we know it was far more the players and the scheme and the coaching that brought that greatness around them, the Legion of Boom. So I think that that's just more indicative of Quinn. Nice guy, everybody loved him. Every player that's ever played for him has loved him. But that doesn't mean that every player is willing to run through. And that's their internal Pierce is. They're willing to run through it. They like him, but they're also willing to run through a brick wall with my man Quinn. And I just can't understand the thought process on making him the head coach when they could have done something special, put the enemy there, and sit over here and maybe gain favor from everybody else outside of the DMV area, finally giving Bienemy a shot and letting Bienemy prove his way of just that small nook of fans to sit over here and get them to be like, man, thank God y'all were smart enough to sit over. We had him in-house. We brought him, you know, and I would have felt much better with Bienemy there and now coming in with a new quarterback. I don't sit over here and feel completely inspired with Dan Quinn and his Mickey Mouse soft defense. And then you bring in an offensive player that's so going to be so important for the team, but he's not the coach to actually, you know,
it
be the
match.
Catalyst.
It doesn't match.
The enemy would have been that.
The offensive
so, you know, the Commanders have made a lot of mistakes, and it's going to be very, very, very interesting to see what this coach can do. Now, here's where the beautiful thing is. I always say challenges turn into opportunities.
Right.
Well, you have a tremendous opportunity to have not just taken a head coaching job and to say, hey, I'm a head coach now, but you have a tremendous opportunity. This is his mindset to sit over and say, I'm going to take a franchise that's been broken and I'm going to be the reason of why it's fixed.
Right.
I don't think he has that thought process. I think he's just sitting over here and trying to figure out how to get it moving in the right direction.
Right.
I think that's too low of a bar to be your aspiration because you never really reach there. You always fall just below it.
Right.
So if you if just above mediocrity is your goal, well, then you'll fall just below it. Well, all you're going to do is just fall into mediocrity, and it's going to be the same old thing, and you're going to be out of here and never get a chance for the rest of your career.
I think so. I think he's only one and done.
No,
I mean one and done as far as his job. He will never
get a job. Yeah, he'll never get another job again.
I think under this new ownership group, mediocrity is just not an option. Like, you can't come in here talking about we're going to go 7 and you know whatever. No, that's not going to work with Magic.
It's not just Magic. And here's what the problem is that you do have an ownership group because we've seen it in Philly. That they just want to be competitive. They want to be in the conversation on who could possibly go. They don't have to necessarily go. And we've seen that with their other ownership groups in the NBA with owning the Philadelphia 76ers. So as I sit over here and we talk and flesh this out, I was going to say that this might not have been the right job for him. But it actually might have been the right job for him because of the ownership. Just wants to appreciate the value of the organization more than it's all about winning.
That's tough. I would like to have seen him go more in the position where the team was pretty much put in place.
Correct. I think that's where he could thrive.
I think that was something that he could have, you know, put a team over the top as far as getting, you know, the organization
like
and just the small things. Yeah,
I think Seattle would have better. If they switch, I would have felt much better about both if McDonald was with.
Right, because you're an offensive mind to go with the quarterback. I feel like I've never really seen
McDonald was a defensive coordinator for the Ravens. So it wouldn't have been an offensive mind. It would have just – he would have bought a more East Coast aggressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was able to walk into and foster in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
He would have been able to bring that to that East Coast grimy team of the Commanders, and brought Quinn to a more West Coast finesse-like. Because, again, if it ain't Legion of Boom, if you don't have those gangsters there, then you don't have that.
Nah.
And those gangsters aren't there. Nope. So it requires a more of a finesse to sit over here and find ways to win. They want to be tough, but I don't see it happening. So I think you and I are in concert. I think McDonald's actually can bring a toughness to Seattle. I think what Seattle wanted to do was get back to that Legion of Boom. Mm-hmm. They knew old man wasn't going to be able to do it.
Right.
So you bring a young cat in there that's cut from that cloth. The problem is I don't think offensively he was on the same mindset of the overall organization. He initially was talking about he wouldn't commit to Geno. Mm. Well, these cats have seen Geno for years and knows the type of professional and doesn't forget the type of stats that Geno has, which is top 10, if not top five.
He's
in every season.
He's definitely been cool.
These cats are growing trees. So when you have a cat that's top 10,
uh-huh,
worst case, top five, best case, half of the statistical categories is top five, half of the statistical categories is top 10, what else do you want?
Right.
If you don't have a Mahomes that you can sit over and project onto your team, then you got to appreciate that.
You
have to find a way to create the rest of the team around him, mm-hmm, because he's not going to lose a game for you. When those statistical categories match up to that, he's not going to lose a game for you. He might not win it, but he ain't going to lose it. So what else can you do? That's when you have those type of quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do to win. And to at least give yourself a shot in the playoffs to go to another round, and then sit over and have a shot to maybe go to another round, is you have to have a quarterback that can get you there.
Don't cost you games.
They have a quarterback that can do that. Now, I think McDonald's, I think where they were smart is they have a forward-thinking younger coach that's not stuck in their ways, that is more open-minded or respectful of analytics, that can build a team.
Right.
I think Quinn is stuck in, this is what I do. That's all we've seen. We saw it at the Cowboys. We saw it in Atlanta.
Yeah,
this is what they do. It's just that old school, Tampa 3, if I'm not mistaken, soft coverage type of deal, but if you don't have those bangers, it don't work.
It never has.
And you got to have gangsters for that to work.
You do. And it's hard to get that many people.
Hard to get that many gangsters, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, in one room.
You got
to
be blessed.
You got to be blessed. You got to, mm-hmm, be lucky. You got to have the right
injuries, people. Like you said.
And I don't think Washington doesn't even have the, you know, when you have new ownership, you're bringing in new people. You don't even have the supporting staff to even go out there and find those people for you.
Uh-huh.
So you know he's going to be a mediocre at best.
A lot of unknowns.
And a relatively tough. You have a top half division with the Cowboys and Philly, and you have a weaker.
Yeah, with the Giants.
And there's not going to be any change. They, mm-hmm, were weaker last year. They're going to be in the weaker side of the division. This year, that's the challenge, mm-hmm, with Dan Quinn. I think McDonald could. I think San Francisco's going down.
I think the Rams
are going to stay level. I think Arizona's going to come up just a little bit.
Okay.
I think we have the ability in that division for the Seattle to slightly raise to either be even, mm-hmm, or just a game above San Francisco.
Just a game above.
So because you can't sell me on Purdy.
NFC West for you.
Well, the NFC West. You can't sell me on Purdy.
You can't sell you?
No.
So until he shows you. Did he show you he can't handle the job? Is that what he showed you?
What he showed me is that he's just not great. And again, for me, it's championship or bust.
Does he cost you games?
We win the Super Bowl or it was a failure of a season. We're never going to see Purdy hoisting.
You don't think so?
No, under no circumstances. He doesn't have enough tools. And here's where a twist is. It's one thing not to have enough tools,
mm-hmm,
when you're only getting paid $900,000 a year, okay, $800,000 a year.
Okay.
It's another thing when you don't have enough tools and you're getting paid $50 million a year.
I got you.
And that's where he's going to get paid at. So what happens when he has to get paid $50 million a year, not $800,000? There's $49 million of fucking good players.
Uh-huh.
that the San Francisco 49ers can no longer acquire.
I got you.
And so at that point, that's why the only quarterbacks that win Super Bowls other than Mahomes and Brady are quarterbacks that are on their rookie contracts, because there's so much money that's eaten up in the salary cap by veteran quarterbacks that you can't bring enough good players to bear. We see the effects of that when you have Mahomes have to play a whole season without any real wide receivers because they didn't have the money to pay him.
But you knew what you was doing when you took that contract in the first place.
No. It's not about the contract. It's about any contract. No, his contract made it more feasible for them to do it.
For Mahomes?
They were willing to give him a 10-year $500 million contract because you can spread that money.
Made it more feasible.
Because you can spread that money. Right.
So the longer
the contract, right? You understand? But the average quarterback isn't doing that. Mahomes is like, I'm so great. I'm going to get paid. I'm going to be doing all these commercials. Indeed. I'm going to sit over here and do a big no matter what so I can do these contracts. I can afford to take $10,000, $15,000 less from the team because we're going to still go to Super Bowl because I'm that special that I'm going to still make as much, if not more, money than I'm making over here.
I got you.
You follow what I'm saying? Purdy, it's not going to happen.
You don't believe in Purdy.
So if he doesn't win this next year, he's never.
Never going to win it? Because you're saying he's never going to have this type of talent around him again.
He's never going to. The team can't afford to have him. The team can't even afford to keep Ayuk, and he's on $800,000.
Right.
They can't even afford to pay Ayuk and pay Debo $20 million. So how the fuck are they going to pay Debo, Christian McCaffrey, and Kittle when he costs 50?
So you feel like they take a big fall. They take a big fall.
Everybody takes a big fall. That's why the Bears didn't keep Justin Fields because it was $25 million. So $25 million versus the $8-9 million that Caleb was going to make. That difference was too much.
That's crazy, but it happens.
It happens. And so I see this team dipping. Next year, the start of the descent of the 49ers starts in 2024. In 2025, they're going to be a stone cold. This dude is a seventh-round pick. He was Mr. Irrelevant. So they might have to sign him this year because you never let your quarterback go into a year being lame duck. Mm-hmm. So they might pay him before the season starts this year.
I wouldn't be shocked.
That's why they can't bring Ayuk back. So, yeah, they're done. So, I see Seattle having the opportunity with Manano going in an upper trajectory.
I got you.
But the real coach, and I'm glad we're saving him for last.
Yeah.
I have nothing but respect. I was able to see him as a young person come up and being recognized as the youngest coach. And he got an opportunity with the egregious Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
That he did.
And being recognized as the youngest coach ever in NFL history. But Raheem Morris.
I like him.
Raheem Morris, who is universally respected amongst NFL individuals. You have a lot of podcasters that disrespected his name. Yeah, a lot of podcasters that talked about. I can remember years ago that the Rams defense was going to be worse when what's my man who went to the Chargers from the Rams?
Staley.
When Staley left that defense and went to take the head coaching job for the Chargers, and he was inputted as the defensive coordinator. And how many of these goofy-ass podcasters talked about how, oh, my God, Raheem Moore, the defense is going to definitely go down. And what they do the very next year, his first year as defensive coordinator.
And put that ring on.
They put a ring on and won a Super Bowl, and that defense was absolutely phenomenal. And then so funny, as the start of the league year last year, and the Rams GM got on stage and talked about how, Morris is going to be an unbelievable coach and he's going to be special. And all you heard from these goofy-ass podcasters were, oh, they must want to get rid of Raheem Morris. It's always going to the negative.
Right.
He must be horrible. Mm-hmm. They want to get rid of him.
And they had a million things they could have said about him.
A million things they could have said of him, but they're going to go to the negative.
Right.
And again, him sitting over here and demonstrating how special he is as a communicator, as a leader, as a tactician, being able, one of the few coordinators that were coached on both sides,
right,
offense and defense. And people forget that he was the interim coach for Atlanta, turning that organization around a little bit, so that was in a precipitous fall. They acknowledge they should have kept him
after the fact,
but didn't, and now had an opportunity to right that wrong, that inequity, and sat over here, made him the coach, and that's who I'm most excited for. Mm-hmm. That's who I look forward to watch his success in the NFC South.
I do,
and watch him just dominate Tampa Bay. Watch him just dominate New Orleans, and watch him dominate Panthers.
Right.
They're going to dominate.
I think so.
I just can't wait to see it. When that team that he has is one of the very few times certain coaches are put in a position to win.
I think he's one of those
coaches that are traditionally put in positions to lose. But he's been put in the position to win. I'm super excited for him. Just getting his quarterback. Not a fan of the quarterback they chose in terms of picking. What's my man from Minnesota?
Oh, Kirk.
Kirk Cousins. Picking Kirk Cousins over Justin Fields. But in the short term, that's not going to be a horrible option for him. And so I just look forward to seeing him flourish and win and crush it.
Hey, man, I'm looking forward to seeing that dude as well. I think he's done a good job. Like, he's done a good job every place he's been. And I think, like you said, man, the naysayers, the people that just try to find something bad to say. Like, come on, man, this dude won the Super Bowl. He had a defensive MVP under his belt.
Yeah.
Like, what else do you want? And then you move him over to a team that has a lot of good pieces already in place. And that's the thing that I was talking about earlier. So Kurt might not be the greatest, but he's definitely not a bum. You have Drake London, he's definitely not a bum. You have Bijan Robinson, definitely not a bum.
Champion.
You have Pitts, definitely not a bum. Yeah. So you're stepping into a situation where you got a lot of good pieces in place already, where you don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Right.
You just got to blend these pieces together to make them fit where, you know, other coaches couldn't at the end of the day. I think the defense, you got some work to do. But I'm already seeing, you know, what the city of Atlanta is embracing this dude. And like I said, I went to Atlanta not too long ago.
Yeah.
I was all in the airport. I'm looking. I'm like, dude, like, this dude got posters in the airport. Like, that's crazy. You know what I'm saying? A black coach at the end of the day. I'm like, not the players, but the coach.
Right.
So clearly, you know, there's something going. You know, the city's behind him. Of course, you got to push your new quarterback, you know, to the masses. It's automatic. But I think it's just a little different. I think they believe in this dude like they probably haven't believed in somebody in a long time. And I think it's going to translate to a lot of competitive football because the NFC South is not tough.
No.
You know, what, the Buccaneers? Is that what we really got to worry about?
Baker Mayfield? It's an expectation.
No.
And now all you have to do is live up to the expectation. We're not saying you need to win a Super Bowl now.
No.
What we're saying is what they couldn't do with Arthur Smith and his rich daddy and everybody sitting over here giving him kudos like he was something special.
Right.
He wasn't. Is now you have a coach that's going to sit over and galvanize his team, very similar to Antonio Pierce, and they're going to be ready to run through a wall for him.
Mm-hmm.
But actually having probably, I would say, more talent than
the
Raiders.
I would say
and I hesitate that because the wide receiver with the Raiders is better.
That's probably about it.
The tight end with Atlanta's better. It's Pitts is better than Mayer.
The running back on
and the running back with Atlanta. Better. So what I say is very similar situations where there's talent there, but their talent's a little bit stronger.
Right.
And so the expectation is they unequivocally dominate their division and get to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Arthur Smith couldn't do with all that talent because he was so brilliant that he couldn't get out of his fucking way and he fucking tripping over his own feet like a goofy fuck. I want to pass to everybody else. I want everybody else to run the ball except my three great players.
Right.
That's what we saw with this goofy motherfucker. But now we have a common sense, resilient, smart, cerebral coach that's going to be able to execute blatant, obvious game plans, which is sitting over here and getting our best talent the ball
At all times.
At all times. Right. It's just like, it don't take rocket science.
It really don't. Don't reinvent the wheel.
Don't reinvent the wheel. You have a Jack. That's why he's a fucking coordinator now. You have a Jack that couldn't get out of his own way, tried to reinvent the wheel. And also, at the end of the day, is the players realize he was a clown. He was a Jack. They didn't give a fuck who his daddy was or how rich or how many billions he had. What they realized is he was a clown, and they weren't willing to run through a brick wall for him. But they are going to be willing to run through a brick wall for him. So super excited for him.
Absolutely.
And super excited for what we got coming on. As you see, we gave you some new flavor.
Yes.
We'll see what we have for you next week. But man, this was a good one.
I appreciate you.
I truly appreciate you.
Yeah.
We chopped up every single one of those coaches. Y'all got all the bars. You got the good, the bad, and the ugly. You got an unvarnished, realistic, unabashed, our opinions on these coaches and what they're going to be able to do next year. And I promise you, go back and watch this fucking episode. You're going to see it was right on point. Gems. Straight gems. With that being said, Church on the Move.
Yes, sir.
Check us.
All right now.
Appreciate you.
See you out there,
folks. Have a nice day.
Yeah.